Welcome to another episode of Pilots Say What, where we get to hear what pilots have to say. And in this case, we're speaking to Jamel out of Atlanta, Georgia, with Aviation Start. And I'm very excited because I think this is a special episode to kind of give you guys some more resources. Now, today we are, you know, obviously doing this over the internet, so it may sound a little bit different, but we've tested it and it sounds great to me. Without further ado, let's go ahead and have Jamel give us a brief introduction. If you guys wouldn't mind, listen up closely. He has some good things to say.
I appreciate it, Zach. My name is Jamel Larkins. I'm the FAA's ambassador for aviation and space education. So basically, I travel around the country and try to get people involved inside of the aviation community and hopefully have a career inside of the industry. And we recently created this new resource called Aviation Start that is basically the industry's largest aviation scholarship database to connect anyone with scholarship opportunities, no matter what career opportunity that you're interested in, whether you want to become a pilot, a mechanic, air traffic controller. We've got over $20 million worth of scholarships people can utilize to get their career off the ground, and it's completely for free.
That sounds amazing. I didn't know that there were scholarship opportunities here. Was that why? What made you create Aviation Start or be a part of this initiative?
So since 2005, I've been traveling around the country with the FAA. We've gone into over 1,000 schools and spoken to more than 60,000 students about aviation career opportunities that are really, really originated from the fact that we know that we have an aviation workforce crisis that's starting inside of the industry. We're starting to actually see some of the effects on that, not just in the pilot community, but you look at air traffic controllers, you look at mechanics. CAE just actually released a report just a couple of weeks ago that shows that over 83% of all mechanics inside of aviation are scheduled to retire within the next 10 years. We've got almost 50% of all pilots inside of the aviation community that will be brand new to the cockpit within the next 10 years. So if we don't start preparing to get people involved in aviation now, we're going to have a crisis. And we're not talking about exponential growth that we're expecting to have. We're just talking about filling the seats of pilots that are legally required to retire within the next 10 years. So if you look at it with the mandatory retirement age of 65, we've got to replace almost 50% of all the pilots inside of the cockpits today.
There takes time to start your aviation training and obviously finish the training and then build hours and then get through a process of getting onboarded into a company and things like that, right? Now, with today's industry and the way training is going, that can go a lot faster than maybe it used to. Not always guaranteed, but taking that into account, would you say that now is a good time to start training for people who are thinking about it? I ask that only because online there's so much rhetoric about there is no pilot shortage, we can't get jobs and things like that. And I want to, you know, be able to give a little perspective to that.
I mean, definitely aviation is a cyclical industry. So, you know, we had this huge hiring boom in 2020. Between 2021 to basically 2024, where the airlines couldn't get enough new pilots inside of the doors, and then it kind of slowed down. If you look at the fact that legally people are required to retire at the age of 65, and almost 50% of those pilots are going to reach that age within the next 10 years, the only thought process is that they're going to have to replace them unless they want to reduce schedule capacity. So we know that we have to get more pilots in the door. We also know that it's expensive to get your training. I mean, you're looking at over $100,000 for most people to go from zero to being able to be eligible for a 121 carrier or even commercial pilot's license for that matter. And so we know that we need to be able to bring all the resources that are actually available. And one thing that most people aren't aware is that there's millions of dollars of scholarships and grants to be able to get people inside of the door. So no matter what your financial background is, you can get your start inside of the aviation industry if you just know where to look. And that's why we created Aviation Start, to be able to help people do that.
I want to know, how is it right now that you are spreading the word about Aviation Start at the moment?
We're doing things like this. As I mentioned to you, Zach, that I've been a big avid watcher of Thrust Flight Training's podcast and some of the social media stuff that you guys do. I love the fact that you not only are training people, but you're actually building a community both online and real life with your students. One cool thing that most people don't realize is that 80% of all student pilots that start flight training end up quitting. And there's a couple of reasons for that. But one of the big things that can help overcome that is by having community mentorship and access to resources that a lot of flight schools miss out on. And I love the fact that you guys are actually out there and building community, providing communication on a regular basis, whether it's, you know, with the podcast where people can learn some of the tips and advice that they need to have a successful career, or just actually get to know other students. And we've seen, based off statistics, that there's about an 87% success rate when you actually have a couple of the big major hurdles in aviation solved, and you guys are helping out with that. So I found out about you guys. So we're doing things like this. We're also doing a ton on social media. We're also doing the Dream Launch Tour again. So I started talking to the FAA for about 15 years. I literally spent more time on the road than I did at home, where we were going into high schools and colleges across the country and talking to people about opportunities inside of the aviation industry. Because of the aviation workforce crisis, I mean, we've seen everything that's happened inside of the national news over the past year. The FAA and I had another conversation, and we decided that it was time to do another tour. So we're on the road going to 20 different cities across the country, plus major aviation events and conferences, just trying to get the word out there that there's a lot of opportunities on the career front, and we've got a lot of resources to help people actually get their start in.
So firstly, I didn't know that there were initiatives like that. If I was younger, if I was in high school or even going into community college or some of these scenarios I found myself in, whether it be job fairs or not, if I would have heard anything about, you know, aviation careers, I think I would have taken it. I think when I was maybe like 16, I really thought I was going to go to the military, learn how to work on planes and things like that. I was very interested in that. And I took a whole nother route eventually, but I never heard anything else about it since then until I started working here. So, I mean, I want to say I appreciate you guys for going out there and finding ways to speak to the communities about how to get involved in aviation. But I'd also love to refer to you saying about 80% of the people who start flight training don't finish. And, you know, there's lots of variables. But you said, you know, resources, community, things like that tend to make a big difference and impact in that number. Is there anything you've seen to kind of show that, that you could speak to by chance?
Yeah. So if you look at some of the aviation outreach programs, there's a lot of big ones. Like AOPA has their high school initiative. EAA has the Young Eagles program. Also, a lot of those aviation outreach programs have scholarship opportunities attached to them. So even if you just give what we've seen statistically speaking, if you just hand out dollars to people without having the community attached to it, without having mentors, in addition to flight instructors, a lot of people will still quit even if the flight training or the cost of flight training is solved, because it's inevitable that you're going to have problems in your flight training. You're going to have a roadblock. You're going to get frustrated at some point inside of that training. But if you have mentors that you can lean on, if you have other students that are going through that same process and you can kind of support each other, it makes a big difference. For example, EAA has seen that they have about an 87% success rate of every single student that they give a scholarship to actually achieves their private pilot's license. And that's basically the inverse of the 80% washout rate. And one of the key requirements of that is the mentoring that's required whenever you get a scholarship with the AA.
To give the listeners and or viewers a bit more context before we move on, I'd like to ask you if there is one thing that you feel like someone kind of needs to understand about you so that you can feel understood, then what would be that one thing? Or maybe there's a few things.
I guess to start off with, I was an airplane nerd in middle school. I used to run home from school literally and play Microsoft Flight Simulator for hours and hours every single day. After doing that for about 2 years, I got the courage to go on an aviation chat room and say, hey, I'm a 12-year-old kid from Augusta, Georgia. I want to become an airline pilot. Does anybody have any advice for me? And a Delta Airlines captain wrote me back and said, you need to check out the Young Eagles program. So I contacted the Young Eagles program. I set up my very first flight. I got hooked on flying. I knew that it was something that I wanted to do, but I came from an average middle-class family. My dad was enlisted in the Army. My mom was a physical therapist. They put a roof over my head and gave me everything that I needed to survive. But the idea of me paying a couple hundred dollars an hour for flight training every single week wasn't in my deck of cards that I was born with. So I volunteered at the local airport. I washed airplanes. I did anything that I possibly could just to be around pilots and aircraft. By the time I turned 13, I could safely handle the airplane in solo flight, but we all know inside of the United States, you have to be 16 to be able to fly solo. The idea of paying for a flight instructor, in my eyes, which was just basically an expensive babysitter for the next 3 years, wasn't in my deck of cards. So I got this bright idea at 13. I was going to try to petition the FAA to fly solo before my 16th birthday.
That's
I ended up
crazy.
flying with six different flight instructors, two designated flight examiners. All of them wrote letters to the FAA saying I could safely handle an airplane in solo flight. It went up to the Secretary of Transportation for this exemption request. And they're like, we need to think about it. And during that time frame, I found out in Canada, you only have to be 14 to fly solo up there. So I was like, if I fly to a different country, get my student pilot's license, solo safely at 14, the FAA has got to grant this exemption. That wasn't the case. I ended up doing it, soloing up there in Canada at 14, becoming one of the youngest American pilots to fly solo then. But the FAA still said no ultimately. But it gave me a lot of cool opportunities after that that I didn't even think of. EA asked me to become their national spokesman for the Young Eagles program, and that's how I kind of got started into going out there and promoting people getting involved inside the aviation industry. And then I started flying air shows when I was 18. I was going to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and literally about 2 weeks after I started classes, I flew my very first air show as the opening act for the Blue Angels at an air show in South Georgia. And then ultimately, from that, the FAA kind of caught wind of me again, and I was asked to serve as the FAA's first ambassador for aviation and space education.
That's really cool. I think there's a lot to get out of what you just said because number one, just getting involved goes a long way. And I think the older we get, the more we look for a return on our time and energy. So much so that it may even block some opportunities. And maybe that's just the way life is set up sometimes. But having that mindset that you're going to just put yourself in different situations, it's interesting to see how it gets you in other situations. I mean, you started early conversations with the FAA by the time you were like 16, it sounds like. I mean, I don't know who puts themselves in that mindset, but it's cool to see your eagerness get you there. Do you have anything to say about that for someone who doesn't know where to start and wants to kind of get involved?
I mean, the one cool thing about aviation is that it is a community. And even though it's an industry, it's also a community. And if you're willing to network, I know we hear that a lot, that you need to network inside of the aviation industry and it'll open up doors. That is 100% true fact. I'm a great example of that. I volunteered at my local airport. I volunteered at major air shows. I ultimately became the national spokesman for EA's Young Eagles program. That opened up doors for me to learn to start flying air shows, all sorts of things. But even on a basic level, going to aviation events or belonging to aviation associations, even on a state and regional level, literally all across the country. If you go to a local business aviation group, if you go to NBAA, or you go to Air Venture, or you go to Sun and Fun, or AOPA's Lions, you're going to
Sure, you can just
meet
Google it.
people. Yeah, you're going to meet people there. And if you develop relationships with those people, it's going to create a lot of opportunities for you to be able to get a job. So when people are talking about, oh, the airlines aren't hiring right now, who says that over 10,000 companies that own airplanes in the corporate aviation sector aren't hiring corporate pilots? And if you get the chance to get the network with chief pilots, flight department managers, other pilots inside of the flight department at some of these different regional aviation groups, you'll be surprised what opportunities will present itself. So I'm a huge fan of go to these different events. Ask if you can volunteer and be a part of the group just to get your foot in the door. And then that will open up the opportunity for you to meet as well as get to know a lot of key people in various positions. And then you'll be surprised what opportunities will present itself.
I miss the days when you could surf the web and find a chat room. maybe it's for the better that we've moved on from chat rooms. But at the same time, as technology has progressed and a lot of community exists online now, which I think does a lot of people a lot of good. But I think it's easy to underestimate the, maybe I sound older saying this now, but I've learned that I have to still kind of get out in the world and be around people. And I get a lot from connecting with people. I went to my job sent me to a convention recently, and I got to connect with people who do similar things as I do. And that I got a lot out of that, more than I could have ever gotten online. I mean, I watch podcasts and videos all day about what I do. And it's not like when you're connecting with people and getting to have a conversation. So I just say that to add on to your point, that, you know, maybe you're not used to doing that, but it's something great to try.
I mean, once again, going from playing Microsoft Flight Simulator for hours and pretending you're an airline pilot doing trips from Atlanta to New York or Miami, like literally I would fly the entire flight, get up in whatever you're playing, whether it's a 767, my favorite was a 777 that I would be flying on these different routes, and fly a 2-hour flight. Once I got home from school, I was basically an airplane nerd, no lie. Yeah. So once I got the chance to actually get inside of a Cessna 172, and it wasn't a pristine Cessna 172 by any means, my young Eagles pilot, Mr. Fox, literally had a 1956 Cessna 172. And this was in the late 90s. So, I mean, it was a 40-plus-year-old airplane. There was a Loran in it, which is something that most people don't even know what that is anymore. But it's basically a network of URs that can talk to each other.
Okay.
But, like, there was no GPS, and it's like none of that. But still, I was so excited to be able to fly over my house, my middle school. I remember to this day seeing my dog run in the backyard of my house. It was like so cool and so surreal. And I remember putting my hands on the controls of the airplane for the very first time. And that's what sold me. After that, yeah. I knew that I was going to be flying for the rest of my life.
That's amazing to hear. I went on some flights. And I've been on plenty of the flights in some of these, you know, the Pipers and the Cessnas as well. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is cool. I've never been in a, you know, general aviation sort of plane, like a single prop plane. But one day, you know, I went up and we had a couple trips to make to a couple airports. And he's like, well, here, you know, take hold of the yoke, you know, put your feet on the rudders. And he had me like kind of feel what it was like to take control of the plane. And I didn't understand the difference in the feeling that you would experience in that situation. So when you say you got to put your hands on the plane and like kind of feel it, yeah, I mean, it's a completely different experience. I just say that to anyone who's maybe a little further along, and they know that maybe, should I take a Discovery flight? I think you should. I think you should. Just to try it out. Maybe find someone, get involved in the community. Maybe someone won't charge you for a Discovery flight. It'd be nice to get your hands on that yoke, though. It's nice.
I mean, there's just to kind of build on that one point, Zach. Programs like the Young Eagles program are completely free. So anyone between the ages of 8 to 17 can take a free flight with a certified pilot pretty much anywhere in the entire country to see if flying is something that they might be interested in. And if it is, there's follow-up resources that are available where you can get your ground school completely free online. And then it gives you the opportunity to apply for some of these scholarships. I know you guys are out in Addison. I wish I could be there today, but I've been on the road a good bit and we're getting geared up for Oshkosh, but
we'll probably see you out there. We'll be out there.
Awesome. I'll definitely have to say hello. But there's groups like the Commemorative Air Force that's based right out there in Dallas. They have two squadrons there, and anyone between the ages of 16 and 19, if they become a youth cadet inside of the CAF, it basically, I don't want to say guarantees you, but pretty much close to guarantees you $15,000 for your private pilot's license, as long as you've been working as a volunteer with the CAF for at least a year. So if you're between 16 and 19, join the organization, volunteer at one of their squadrons, get to know the people, and then you get $15,000 to be able to do flight training at any flight school inside of the country if you want. So, I mean, there's a ton of opportunities. So you could go literally from your very first flight to being able to get your private pilot's license for free. And another big misconception is that if you're over 19, that there's no opportunities out there. I can name literally hundreds of different scholarships are available for your instrument, your multi, your commercial, and even some fun flying experiences for people that are older as well. So I don't like the fact that a lot of people think that finances stops them from being able to make their dream happen inside of the aviation industry, because it's not true.
What are some of those things when you're over 19 that would be able to help you? And maybe, like you just said, there's hundreds of things you could think of. So let's just put a little bit more of a parameter on it. If someone's completely doesn't know anything about aviation and they haven't done any sort of volunteering or training, is there any great places to start, or is it location based? What would they do?
So first thing you gotta do is say goodaviationstart.org. It's completely free. You got the chance to be able to find some of the different career development resources that are out there, as well as the scholarship resources that are out there. It's going to be able to connect you with state and regional programs that you can be able to get involved in, no matter what part of the country that you're in. And that's one of the key things that I would recommend just to start off with, because exposure is key. As you mentioned, if you would have known about aviation when you're a little bit younger, life might have ended up a little bit different. So the entire point of whether we're doing like the Dream Launch Tour, whether it's Aviation Start, we're partnering with some of the other aviation outreach programs that are out there. We're just trying to get people exposed to it, because if we can get them exposed to it, they at least know what options legitimately exist out there for them. And then once we expose them to it, we give them the resources to be able to actually make that dream become a reality. But specifically for a person that's starting off brand new, that's maybe a little bit older than 19, because from 16 to 19, you can pretty much write your own ticket, no matter what the financial cost is. If you're above 19, there's still a ton of resources out there. You just got to be a little bit more creative, but we still connect people with those opportunities above 19 as well. For example, I highly recommend starting off with some of the regional programs that are out there. If you look at, like, if you're in Chicago, the Chicago Business Aviation Association, if you're in Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Aviation Business Association, there's literally one of those conferences or groups pretty much all across the country. And if you connect and become a member in those organizations, pretty much every single one of them has scholarship opportunities, whether you want to become a pilot and it'll help pay for your private, all the way up to advanced ratings. Like a lot of them, Chicago Business Aviation, for example, gives out citation type ratings that are available. So if you're, you know, finishing up your commercial and you don't want to go the CFI route, but you want to be able to apply to some company that has corporate jets and say, hey, I have my own type rating available, you can get a $22,000 type rating for free. And there's a ton of different opportunities like that across the country. If you just take the time to fill out an application and submit it, and you can have the opportunity to get a $20,000 type rating. But the unfortunate part is there's so many people that aren't willing to even take that little bit of time to do that, where it doesn't even cost them anything. And so these opportunities go unclaimed a lot of times all across the country.
And for the record, for the listeners, the viewers, there's so many flight schools, so many training programs out there. So, you know, if you don't even know about one that's close to you, you can start by looking that up. You can do a little bit of research. Just understand that, know that Thrust, we're only in a few locations. We're going to be opening up in Phoenix, Arizona. And of course, we have student housing and stuff if you want to travel to go to school with Thrust. But at the end of the day, wherever you are, it sounds like there's resources. I wanted to ask maybe one more follow-up question, and it would be, how does someone navigate? So when they go to aviationstart.com, or I'm sorry, is it .org? Gotcha, right. So aviationstart.org. When someone comes to y'all's site, is there any sort of assistance they go through, or they kind of can click around and they should be able to understand what they're looking at a little bit?
So as soon as you go to aviationstart.org, for most people, it's straight to the scholarship page. And then you register for that resource. It's completely free. But once you register for it, you'll get an email that links you to the member site. And then once you get into the member site, once again, 100% free. But you go into it, it gives you a list or access to all of the scholarship opportunities that are out there. It gives you a list of all of the flight schools across the country that are available for people to be able to do it. But one key thing that I will throw out there for you guys is the fact that it's important not to just find a flight school. It's important to find the right flight school for you. And as I mentioned, there's an 80% washout rate inside of the flight training industry from people that start learning how to fly that ultimately end up quitting. And that's unfortunate, but there's a few key things that you can do to make sure that you have a successful career and you end up being part of that 20% success rate inside of flight training versus the 80% washout rate.
I can't wait to share that. I'm actually very excited about sharing that. I mean, I have conversations every day with people who want to start flight training. And they ask the same questions you're saying, is like, well, how can I afford this? What are the resources and what do I need to think about? So we're having I just can't wait to share it, honestly. I want to ask you about, what part of flight training has challenged you the most early on? That's just for the people who are concerned about that.
So I was a little bit of an odd duck. After I actually got my private pilot's license inside the United States, I went full ham on flying aerobatics and learning how to fly air shows. At 16, I was like, I'm going to become an air show performer. I didn't worry about my instrument and my multi until like probably 4 or 5 years after I became a professional air show performer, literally. Mm-hmm. I focused on aerobatics from once I got my private, and then once I turned 18, I got certified to fly air shows, and I focused on that. Although that is physically intense, like you're pulling positive 7 Gs, pushing negative 5, you're flying inside of the heat in a canopy with no AC whatsoever. It's a brutal job, but it's a lot of fun. I'm not going to say that that was the most difficult. I'm going to say my instrument rating was truthfully the most difficult.
Wow.
I did an accelerated flight training program, a 2-week course to get my instrument. And I worked That's my fast. Butt off for that. I was able to pass it and we did fine with it. But to go from really flying aerobatics and knowing how to fly an airplane upside down a couple hundred feet off the ground and maintain within 10 feet of altitude, that's one thing. But to be able to fly instrument approach down to minimums, completely different ballgame. I'm going to say my instrument rating was probably the most difficult part of my training for me.
I like that insight. And I can imagine, from my conversations with the CFIs and the pilots about feeling the plane versus kind of reading what you got going on. From someone who's doing aerobatics, I can imagine trying to switch your brain into a different gear like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about feel when you're flying aerobatics. And then to go from all about instruments, it's completely different.
Did you do anything else professionally flying wise outside of the aerobatics? I mean, did you ever move on to any commercial or passenger flying?
So I've been involved when I started at Embry-Riddle. I actually started up an aircraft sales and leasing company. So by the time I graduated Embry-Riddle, I owned about a little bit north of 10 brand new Cirruses that I was leasing out to flight schools. And I've been involved aircraft sales and leasing business ever since. So although we've managed a couple airplanes, some Citations, Challenger, Pilatuses, a bunch of different airplanes, I didn't full-time fly for it, but I did fill in on different trips whenever we had our pilots that needed vacation or were sick and stuff like that. So I've done a little bit of corporate flying, but I wouldn't call myself a professional corporate pilot. But I know how to get the job done if necessary.
No, I get it. I was curious if you get to fly still, you know, because sometimes you get to leave the fun part behind.
It's not as, I hate to say it, that flying is definitely more of a getting from point A to point B now experience for me, because we are on the road a lot. We're doing another 20-city tour for the Dream Launch Tour now. So I do get the chance to fly myself to a lot of those locations. So I'm staying active and staying inside of the cockpit, but I'm not getting the chance to fly aerobatics and have the fun that I used to do as much anymore.
I'm sure though, being up in the sky like that, I'm sure it's nice to be up there sometimes, and it's nice and quiet too. Another question I did have for you was, I'm wondering what sort of mindsets or, you know, kind of habits do you think either helped you or you've seen help other people progress in flight training?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head on a couple different things, and I'll speak about both flight training and professionally. In terms of professionally, being willing to invest a little bit of your time or energy and making new connections, going to different events that you might feel uncomfortable in just because you've never been to the NBA national convention where over 30,000 people go to. And there's not only the opportunity to meet pilots and corporate flight departments, managers, but there's opportunity to meet aviation businesses and vendors all across the industry. Putting yourself out there is extremely important. And then once again, volunteering with those opportunities or those organizations will put you in places that you wouldn't necessarily get the opportunity to do. So I highly recommend, even if it's your local flight school, volunteer. Ask them if you could help out with some of their recruiting activities. Ask if you could help out with, like how I mentioned earlier, Thrust Flight Academy's involvement with the UNT ACE Academy. If you can help do things like that, you're going to end up meeting people that you wouldn't necessarily meet during the normal course of just specific flight training, and that will present opportunities for you specifically for things that might be helpful in terms of flight training. Study is the number one thing. If you come prepared for your flight training, it is going to go so much easier. The second thing is make sure that you have all your ducks in a row. Like, we kind of have an outline of things that we recommend for people to do at Aviation Start. One of them is figure out your finances before you actually start. Because if you can fly more frequently, you're going to excel a lot better. It's going to be a lot easier for you. And ultimately, it's going to be a lot cheaper. So whether you're applying for scholarships, whether you're getting financing, you can, if you're fortunate enough to be able to pay for it out of pocket, no issue. But if not, you need to get your loan set up in advance for it. There's a lot of great companies, Stratus Financial, that I know that you guys work with, and a few others that really kind of help prepare students for, they're not waiting another 2 weeks for a paycheck for them to be able to continue their flight training. And then they end up losing some of that muscle memory or that knowledge that they just gained on that last flight. So making sure that you have your finances in order, making sure that you connect with your flight instructor, which is a huge thing. I hate to say this since we're on a flight school podcast, but if you aren't connected with your flight instructor or your flight school, you need to switch. There's nothing that states you have to stay connected with that same flight instructor. If you guys just don't mesh well, make a change, because that's one of the top three reasons why people quit flight training, is that they have a bad flight training experience, whether it's with the instructor or the flight school or whatever the case is. And it's much better to actually change that situation than just to give up on your dream inside of the aviation industry.
You know, we hear that a lot. Again, we have a lot of people who come here for different reasons. A lot of people come here having had already started their private pilot certificate rating, or, you know, at least their training. And sometimes people come in a little frustrated, or people give us a call. They're like, hey, how can I start there without losing all my progress? You know, I feel like I'm at a standstill. And there's a lot of conversation online about, oh, it's not all on your instructor. You should be able to progress. You should take your training into your own hands and things like that. And I can understand it takes that proactive mindset, right? No one's going to hand you anything. But at the same time, these situations are real. We talk to people who are eager and don't have the resources and don't know what to do next. And so I don't know, how much do you see that kind of thing?
I mean, it's definitely, you got to be able to come prepared to it. And there's no one's going to give you your private, your commercial, your instrument. You're going to have to work for it. But at the same time, that's a misconception that I think a lot of people inside of the flight training community forget, is every single student that's trying to get their private or go from zero to hero type program, they're paying on average $5 or more per minute. And in any other industry, if somebody's paying $5 plus a minute for experience, you're going to be doing whatever you can to make sure that they have a great experience for it. Inside of flight training, for whatever reason, we think, no, you just pay us for this opportunity for us to abuse you sometimes. But then you do have some good players out there, like you guys specifically. I love the fact that on average, your students don't wait more than a week for their check ride, where you hear some flight schools, people are waiting 6 months for them to get a check ride with the DPA. Things like that aren't things that are good for the industry, and it's what causes some of that high dropout rate that we see inside of the industry. But then when you do things where you have the capability for students to be able to build a community for each other, you have the opportunity for them to be able to connect and find out scholarships or financing solutions. Right. You have the opportunity for them to be able to participate in career fairs or be able to do things that's going to help them be successful once they graduate. Those are all huge things to be able to make the flight training experience more successful. And then one other thing that I would definitely mention is, I know everybody wants to go from zero flight time to the left seat of a 121 carrier as quickly as possible, but don't forget the fun aspect of aviation. make sure that you go to air shows, make sure that you go to fly-ins or right. you participate in local aviation events. Go do a Young Eagles flight and take some kid up for their very first flight. Do a fun flight with your friends just to go fly somewhere to a concert or dinner or whatever, because it kind of helps reset that experience where it's not just about flight training for a straight 18 months. You get this sprinkle in a little bit of fun flying inside of it, and it will help you get through those rough spots for sure.
Thank you for sharing that. I think since we are a fast track program, I can see the difference in the CFIs that tell me, they're like, yeah, I mean, I took the weekend and I went to an air show, or I went to Oshkosh, or I got to take someone up for a discovery flight. And you can kind of see how they're like, oh man, I needed that, when they talk about it, because you're just, you know, you're just swallowing the information and you're working a lot. So I appreciate you for sharing that. I wanted to ask you one more question before I asked you about some of the thoughts that people. So I guess I'll just move on to it then. People think about the entry point to aviation and they look at the big numbers and they say, I have to take out a loan for how much? I have to spend how much on each rating? I have to spend how much time? Is it scary to take out a big loan to start flight training?
100%. But the one thing that I would say that I would do is, if I was going from zero to hero and I have to sign on a dotted line for that 100 plus type program, I would do it. But then I'm also going to be applying for every single scholarship opportunity that I can find out there. One for my instrument, one for my private, one for my commercial, my multi, my CFI. And every single one of those that I get, I'm just not going to take out the loan portion for that. So most of the loan programs that exist for flight training, you're going to get it in trenches for every single stage that you complete. If you get a scholarship for your instrument rating, there's no need to take out the money for it. And so it's not going to cost you anything, but it's good to have it set up in advance. Once again, it's all about preparing. So have the game plan that worst case scenario, I can pay for everything up front with this loan, but I'm also going to work my butt off and make sure that I can get as many scholarships to take care of each one of those stages. And there's a lot of opportunities. I cannot stress this enough. If people just go out there and look at all the different opportunities available, it's at aviationstart.org, completely free. Check it out. See what opportunities that exist and are applicable for you. Get your flight, your financing in order, but then take advantage of those different things. The other thing that a lot of people miss out on is working at aviation companies. If you work at a lot of different aviation companies, they will pay for some portion of your flight training, if not all of it, for various different stages. So that's one thing for people that may have an issue from a financial standpoint. Explore what aviation related companies are in your area and what their employee perks might be, because you could get your private, you might be able to get your instrument, all sorts of different things based off of what company that you work at. And a lot of them, again, allow you to be able to do that at any flight school. So it's not necessarily has to be at their specific thing. I'm sure Russ, for example, might have a discounted rate for employees to be able to fly airplanes, things like that. Think outside of the box sometimes to be able to get your goals and be able to make it happen.
Actually, I'm not sure what her official title is, but she handles a lot of the documentation for our students going through their ratings. And she's worked basically on the back end for I don't know how long. But she started flight training. She just got her private recently here at Thrust. And a lot of people do that.
I mean, it's something that a lot of people don't think about a lot. Is that, hey, if I work at an aviation company, there might be some employee benefits that give me the opportunity to be able to pay for my flight training that doesn't come out of my salary, or at least I get it at a reduced cost. So why not take advantage of those opportunities? So no matter what type of situation you're in, whether you have to work full time, you still might be able to work full time at an aviation company and get your training paid for. Or if you have the capability of going full time straight out of high school, which is something unheard of 5 years ago, by the way,
right?
To be able to go straight for her 121 career, you might be able to do it, but you have to get financing for it. But while you do that, go ahead to set up your full financing package for you can do worst case scenario, but then work your butt off for every single scholarship opportunity that's available. I mean, I literally know people that have paid for like over 60% of their flight training by getting scholarships, and that's huge.
If someone has, let's say someone just started their private, let's say they already secured a loan for a pretty expensive fast track program or something like that, and they're thinking, and I mean, the money might still be on their head, on their mind, you know, even though they've already made the decision. Does that set them up to not be able to receive as many resources?
No, absolutely not. You can literally, there's scholarships for every single stage of flight training that's out there. Most of them aren't a straight, I apply for it and it pays $100,000. It's you apply for your private, you apply for your instrument, you apply for a commercial, and then there's a lot of these for each different organization. So say, you know, you might have already gotten your private. You can apply for your instrument at one organization. You can apply for your commercial at another organization. You can apply for your CFI at another one. You can get your 737 type rating at another one. Like, literally, there are so many different opportunities out there. You just got to be strategic. And we've done the hard work of putting it all in one space for you. All you got to do is take the time to go through the database and look for it.
I love that. And I love resources like that. I'm a one-stop shop kind of person. I'd love to go somewhere and find everything I need in one place. And I checked out y'all's website. It looks great. I mean, it looks easy to navigate anyways. I can say this, or what I want to do now is let's zoom out a little bit and look like a little bit big picture. And let's say you were looking into the future from a zero time standpoint. And you're like, okay, what could the next 5 years of my life look like if I'm pursuing a career in the airlines? What are some things that come in your mind in order, you know, I think I would go to aviationstart.org and then I would start here. I would search for this school. What would you do if you wouldn't mind sharing? Let's just say that you're 18 or 19 or so.
All right. If I'm 18, 19, I'm going to Aviation Start, like you mentioned. I'm going to look at some of the different aviation outreach programs, whether it's joining an AOPA high school curriculum where you do your ground school as a official class in high school that then helps sets you up for like being able to get one of their private pilot scholarships. I'm also going to participate and see if there's like a CAF squadron in my nearby area, which, by the way, CAF, for those people who aren't familiar, operates the world's largest collection of warbird aircraft. So if you've ever been interested in a P-51 or a B-17 or A-26, you get the opportunity to hang out with pilots and flight crew on it, and also get the chance to fly on those airplanes too. But by being around it, it exposes you to the opportunity, like I said, of being able to win a $15,000 scholarship. Mm-hmm. And their approval rates for that is probably one of the highest ones that I've seen inside of the industry. So like I said, you just show up, you're polite, you do what you're told, or at least volunteer to help out, and the likelihood of you getting a full private pilot scholarship is really high. So I'm going to start doing that, you know, and once I finish that, I'm going to apply for a loan to be able to pay for all of the rest of my flight training that I need. So I'm going to get that set up in case I need it, but my goal is to not use it, or at least not utilize the vast majority of it. And then I'm going to get involved with some of the local groups that are out there, whether it's, you know, the state regional events like the Florida Aviation Business Association or the Chicago Business Aviation Association or some local flying group. And I'm going to network my butt off and get the chance to meet every single corporate flight department manager, chief pilot, or pilot that I know. Literally, if I was starting off, what I would probably do is find out all of the companies that had a corporate flight department in my area. I'm going to find out the names of some of those pilots. I'm going to go on LinkedIn. I'm going to send them a nice cordial email saying, hey, I'm a new private pilot trying to become a commercial pilot. I'm based at XYZ Airport. I noticed that you guys have your flight department there. Is there any chance I could get a quick tour of the airplanes or your corporate flight department? As soon as I have my foot in the door, I'm going to then open up the opportunity. After getting to know them for a little bit, I'm going to keep in contact with them and see if there's an internship opportunity that might exist. So while I'm doing my flight training, I'm going to see if I might be able to do an internship. If I could, even if it's me washing the airplanes in their corporate flight department and keeping them clean, I'm going to do that. So once I have the capability of having my commercial and my multi, are there any opportunities for me to fill in as a, you know, contract pilot on trips with you guys? And then I'm going to do my best to put my the best foot forward as possible on those contract trips. And then I'm going to hand in my resume and see what opportunities that it is. Because even though a lot of corporate flight departments might have a quote unquote minimum that they need in terms of flight time, if they know you and they've seen you progress from zero to commercial multi-pilot, and they see that you actually are professional, you know your stuff, that you've done a few contract trips for them, it's really funny how quickly some of those insurance requirements somehow magically disappear or get reduced in situations like that.
Yes, I feel like that goes with most job markets. And as unique as aviation is, it's really not that much different. I mean, even just talking about the scholarships, who knew that was an option? Just because it's so unique doesn't mean that there aren't similar resources. But that being said, you've already kind of gotten yourself into a position of where maybe you can work as a pilot. Let's say that you've gone all the way through, you know, CFI, CFII, and maybe you've gotten your multi already. Maybe you're entering the workforce as a CFI, and you're working on your minimums to get your ATP. What would you suggest to these people in these positions who are looking to maybe get into their career?
There's a lot of opportunities there. I would check out some of the different organizations, like whether it's OBAP, whether it's Women in Aviation. And then another key misconception is like OBAP, the Organization of Black Aerospace Professionals. It's not just about African-Americans or minorities. Literally anybody can belong to them. And they had mentor programs, whether it's Women in Aviation, OBAP, ALPA, all of these different groups have some sort of mentorship program, which is slightly different than the cadet programs that exist out there. I would take advantage of those, because one key thing that will make an impact or a difference when your application gets submitted to a company or an airline is having internal recommendations. So if you get the chance to meet members of any of those different organizations and you get to actually develop a relationship with them, they're going to walk your resume in, and you're going to stand a little bit apart from the guy that's just submitting it online. All those things do make a difference. So whether there's a huge hiring boom that we've experienced over the last couple of years to it being a little bit slower, right, that we're experiencing right now, the people that have an internal recommendation are going to be light years ahead of the ones that don't have that internal recommendation, and that recruiter's just solely looking at some name on a resume and trying to decipher if this is a person that's going to go to the next step or not. When that recruiter gets a call from XYZ inside of, you know, whatever airline it is and says, you really need to look at this guy. I've known him for 10 years. He's worked his butt off to be able to get here. We should give him a chance if we can. That's going to carry huge weight, or a lot of weight, when that happens. And then the second thing is, I know everybody says that there's not any hiring going on and the hiring boom is over. That's not the case. Literally look at the facts. When you turn 65, you can no longer fly commercially inside of the United States. The Federal Aviation Administration has that rule. If you look at the FAA ATP database, literally close to 50% of every single airline pilot inside of the United States will reach 65 within the next 14 years. If that is the case, there has to be people that flow into those career opportunities to be able to keep the entire system just going as it is today. That does not talk about all the growth on business aviation, commercial space transportation, unmanned aerial vehicles, and powered lift segment that's going to be happening over the next 5 to 10 years as well. So there's a lot of opportunities inside of the aviation industry if people want it.
This may be a little redundant, but let's say you're talking to a CFI that is expressing to you that they are having a tough experience looking for a place to work, and they're expressing to you their concerns. How do you validate their experience while still reassuring them?
Okay, there's no doubt that the amount of people that the airlines are hiring right this second is slower than what it was 2 years ago. But also at the same time, If you look at what was happening 5 to 10 years ago, a lot of those people wouldn't even be able to apply for an airline 5 to 10 years ago. So you're already moving light years ahead of, like, I hate to say this, but when I was going to Embry-Riddle, I'm dating myself and sounding like an old guy now, but when I was going to Embry-Riddle, you had to have a four-year college degree. You had to spend, you know, 1500 hours before you could even get that. So you're probably looking at 25 to 27 before you could even get to a regional carrier. And now there's people that are flying for major airlines at that standpoint. What in the world are you complaining about? Life is good in the general sense, but I get, like, everybody wants it right now. So despite the fact that they could be 5-10 years ahead of what pretty much all of those guys that are going to be retiring were at, they still don't feel that experience today. So what I would recommend is, once again, if you are having a hard time finding that opportunity just because hiring has slowed down temporarily, what organizations are you networking with? How many different aviation conventions are you going to? What other career options are you exploring right now? Are you literally going to those business aviation conferences and getting a chance to talk to people? Are you going to the Airline Pilot Association conferences or conventions and talking to the recruiters in person and not just sending in a resume and expecting somebody to make a phone call? Are you networking and volunteering with those organizations? Because I promise you, if you go to one of those conventions, especially on the airline side, and volunteering, just say, hey, can I help out with the registration, or can I help do whatever aviation outreach thing that you're doing, you're going to meet one of the recruiters from one of the airlines that's also volunteering there, and you, if I was you, they would become my next best friend over the next 3 days. And it's not going to be superficial, but I'm going to also get the opportunity to learn, be able to have an impact on somebody else's future. And I'm going to be setting myself up for an opportunity in the future as well.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Long story short, I get that it can be a little tough, but make sure you're doing the best that you can in terms of putting yourself in situations for you to be able to have that, you can open up doors that aren't available for everybody else. And every single person has the capability of doing that.
Earlier, you mentioned the fact that Thrustlight on average has about a 1 week wait time for check rides. And that's due to the fact that we have a examining authority through the FAA. And you might be familiar with this, but you know, this is basically the FAA's way of saying, hey, you guys meet certain requirements, therefore you can give, you know, end of course exams, or basically reward students with their pilot certificate per rating, as long as you guys maintain a certain quality of a program. And so that's something that allows us to move students along quicker and not have to wait on things like check rides. Also, I did want to mention the fact that, you know, we have a solution for people who struggle with getting their private pilot license. Maybe they've plateaued, maybe they don't find the resources that they're looking for, or even maybe they've come to understand that the program they chose isn't what's best for them, and they're looking to change flight schools or instructors. And so when people call us and ask us, hey, is there a way for us to change flight schools and start with Thrustlight without losing all our progress? Well, for a lot of people who are interested, there is a solution to start flight training here at Thrust, even though you've started somewhere else. And we call that the Finish Line program. So if you're interested in, you know, kind of starting fresh with the new program, give us a call and ask about, the Finish Line program. We'll give you all the information we have about it and see if it's a good fit for you.
Biggest thing that I want to say is aviation start, honestly, is what I wish I knew when I first started learning how to fly. We want to connect people with all the resources, whether it's programs that will actually help you get a job after you finish your training, or if you're completely starting off brand new, it's a place that you can find all of the resources to be able to get you inside the cockpit or into a variety of other aviation careers completely for free. We've got a huge demand of needing to get people into the aviation workforce over the next 10 to 15 years. And we're here to hopefully make that transition into the industry a little bit easier. And we're really excited to be able to work with guys like you guys at Thrustlight, because it's all about a community. And I love the fact that you guys are building a community with it too.
Thank you, Jamel, for joining us on this episode of Pilots Say What, where we get to hear what pilots have to say. I think this has been very insightful. You're sharing lots of resources, and I look forward to having many more conversations about aviation start. So if you guys want to know more about those resources, aviationstart.org. We'll see you guys on the next episode of Pilots Say What.